a penny in a wishing well. Coins and rings made music as they fell. I promised I would never ever tell. But if you can keep a secret, I'll tell you something good. Clear time within your mind, and forever is now.
I play saxophone, flute, and also a vocalist. The household was musical. You know, my mother was the local choir director, you know, in the local church. And she exposed us to different genres of music. B.B. King to Ray Charles, Ella Fitzgerald, Count Basie. I really appreciated the experience of listening to the blues. My brother-in-law, who had just gotten out of the military, he was in the Marine Corps, he was a wannabe saxophone player. And I would, you know, just sort of follow him around, and I would really pay close attention to, you know, how he approached the horn. One day, you know, we were listening to David Fathead Newman being featured with Ray Charles, and I decided to pick it up and actually was able to construct a, you know, the C major scale, and it really shocked him because he had no idea that I was paying, you know, that kind of attention to what he was doing. And it was at that point he gave me the horn. He said, "The horn is yours." You know? Basically sort of self-taught myself, you know, bought a method book, learned the fingerings and scales and so forth, and that's what things sort of took off, you know, with me at that point. The decision was between New York and Los Angeles. My brother, you know, was well established in New York, and not just in New York, but throughout the world. So, you know, I wanted to make the decision to sort of establish my own thing. did a lot of freelancing, you know, in Los Angeles, you know, a lot of sessions. That's when I joined up with Doug Kwan. He was very innovative, you know, very creative guy, you know, and it was a great experience, you know, working with him. He's the one that introduced me to Maurice White, Earth, Wind & Fire. Maurice heard that I was in town, and he communicated to Doug that, you know, they're looking for a horn player, you know, to be a part of the band. And Doug recommended me. I mean, he could have selfishly said, no, I'm keeping Ronnie in this band. I followed through on that and went in audition, thinking that I was going to be a part of a horn section, because in those days, in R&B bands, they all had horn sections. But when Maurice heard me play, he said, you know, Ronnie, we're just going to go with the one horn, which I thought was, you know, that was a pretty unique thing to do, because, as I said, you know, most of the R&B bands, they all had horn sections. It turned out to be an epic thing, and, you know, with the sound of Earth, Wind & Fire. Of something different, you know, for me, you know, as a solo artist. So, interestingly, when I left the group, it wasn't a good break. Maurice didn't, you know, he didn't accept that too well. I had the opportunity to go further and be a part of a musician that I had always really looked forward to working with, Hugh Masekela from South Africa. In fact, when I was in college, he had a big record called Grazing in the Grass. When that record was released, I expressed to one of my classmates, I said, you know, one day I'm going to play with this guy. It was sort of prophetic, because it, you know, turned out the opportunity was given me to work with him. It was him that, you know, that sort of kicked me out. You know, I mean, it was in a loving way, but he recognized, he saw certain qualities in me as a musician and an artist. And he said, Ronnie, you should do your own thing, man. You know, I'm not imitating the way he spoke, you know. He said, it's time for you to do your own thing, man, you know. And it was at that point that it was like a redirection in that area of being a solo artist. Thank you.
HDR.
So, if you're outside of our coverage area, remember, you can listen to WRCT online. Live streaming available at www.wrct.org. WRCT Pittsburgh. You have no excuse not to listen.
We always begin with the star of the show, and the star of the show in Take Me to the River is the music. That's the star. And so we start with the music, and we end with the music, and in between we learn about the culture and the great people, the musician, the musical community. And again, we learn about our masters and their process. We learn about up-and-coming stars. We learn about big themes like mentorship and how that goes both ways, young to old to young. We break down walls, whether it be generational walls, ethnicity walls, gender walls. We break those down. So the music is the way we navigate the story, and we make a new record. So it's living history in front of you, but you learn along the way.
I'm in love with my love.
You see beautiful moments of this torch literally happening in front of you. And everyone recognizes it. And, you know, the style of filmmaking wants you to feel like you're in the room with me and with us. And those moments become very clear. And a specific moment is with Ledisi and Irma Thomas and how they talk about, Irma talks about passing the baton to Ledisi, and Ledisi talks about accepting it and accepting that responsibility, and that it's up to her to let the next generation know what it was that moved her. So yeah, I think those legacy musicians who are open to it, they know what's going on.
But she seems to have a natural knack for it, and that's a good thing. So I feel very comfortable in passing the torch to her.
And I wish I
Yo, check this out. Chuck D, Public Enemy number one, bring the noise. That's right. Doing it one-to-one with my man Kevin Amos right here on WRCT 88.3 FM on your dial. Check it out. Bring the noise.
As far as I can remember, you've always been in my life.
Yeah.
Doc would call me and he'd tell me stories about my grandpa. So I learned about his legacy from people like Dr. John. Remember that thing we did for the halftime?
Yeah.
They paired two pianos up, and Doc and I up. So we were doing Ico, Ico. And every time we got to our part for the rehearsal, Harry would come on stage and he would introduce, and now we have Ico, Ico. Something about would cringe and everything. And you recognize that. I didn't say anything. Doc recognized after about half an hour of us doing the tune 20 times. You said, "And DeVal, what's wrong with you, eh?" So I said, "I don't know, Doc. I don't want to start no confusion." He said, no, tell me what's the problem. Seem like you're not right today. I said, "Well, every time Harry introduced the song, remember that? He calls it Ico, Ico." And I said, my grandpa's still living and I can't put my heart into it by it being called Ico, Ico, because he wrote it as Giacomo.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you say, "Hey, Harry, come here." So Harry stopped the rehearsal. He came. He said, "Harry, we have DeVal here. And Sugar is still living, you know. I think it's only befitting." I will never get you saying that. "I think it's only befitting his grandpa wrote that. It ain't Ica Ica. It's really Giacomo's. We got to change that, eh?" And within 20 minutes, the Saturday morning for rehearsal, changed that publishing to Giacomo so that my grandfather could get the credit, for that. And I thought that was, you know, that this is the Dr. John I grew up with. This is the Mac Rabernack I grew up with, the Night Tripper, my uncle I grew up with, you know.
Oh, The thing we say is if you learn how to do something, you can choose to do it or not to do it. But if you didn't learn how to do it, you can't choose to do it. Roots Music was a thought in my head. We wanted to start off with just a drum line as a pilot program. It didn't work out that way. We started the first day with supposed to be 19 kids. 42 kids showed up, then 65 the next week, then over 100. And when the kids showed up, they wanted more than just drums. They wanted sousaphones, clarinets and stuff. And the program pretty much took feet and walk on its own.
Cajun music is a uniquely American music, where you take the German accordion, the French folk songs, the Acadian violin, the African rhythms, and you put it all together, and you have this music that's unlike any other. We'll be right back.
Well, Mardi Gras Indians started way before the early 1900s. And what it was, the Indians, African Americans could not go on Canal Street, or we couldn't go on St. Charles. So we had to go in our neighborhoods. So certain people started, like Zulu started, Baby Doll started, Skeleton Men, and Mardi Gras Indians. And that was just for all the older people that couldn't come off their porch to have a good Mardi Gras. And a lot of times people thinking that we were marking Native Americans, but we're really not. Because back in slavery, the slaves ran to the Indians. Because the masters couldn't go on the Indians' territory, or that'd be a big old fight, big old war going on. So we're just saying thank you for helping our ancestors through our Indian suits. Big Chief, you're just not the Mardi Gras Indian. Believe me, you're not the Mardi Gras Indian. As far as me, you got to be a marriage counselor. You have to be a regular counselor. You have to be a school teacher sometimes for other children. So it's just an all-around thing, but I love it. You know, you got to be a role model in your community. And don't get me wrong, when I first stepped into this position, I was skeptical. Like, I was like, hold on, I don't want everybody looking up to me and stuff like that. But it just fell in my lap, so I had to roll with the punches. And what I mean by that is, a lot of times, as my Indians, they might go through problems. And I'm the first person they're going to come to. You know, I had an Indian one time got in a car accident. He called me first. Well, what I'm going to do? You know, but, and they might have marriage problems. So I have to sit down and talk to both of them. I had a little kid that was getting in trouble at school. So me and another one of my Indians, we went to the school. I mean, we walked in the classroom. He just started shivering. I just saw his hands shaking. And we just stood there, and all the kids looking like, wait, who are these people? Like, why are they in our classroom? They're not saying nothing. We just stood back in the classroom, made sure he wasn't doing nothing. And I walked up to him and told him something in his ear, and after that, he had no problem. And all my kids that's in my tribe, I have to see their report card. You know, if you're not making up to a certain grade average, you can't match. You might as well just put it up to next year. You know, I'm not saying that you can't never match again, but at this moment, once your grades get better, then you can match again. So, even in the community, I have kids run up to me and be like, oh, ain't you this chief that did such, such, such? You know, so if I'm out there doing something out of the business and they're looking up to me, they're going to be following right behind me. And certain things they see on TV, they just think, oh, yeah, I could do it like that. And I'm just here to let them know, no, you can't do it like that. It ain't that easy. You know, we could do it the honest way, because you could be the next president. You could be the next teacher, the next big chief if you want to be, you know. So that's my role in my community, to lead the kids the right way.
Importance of it is that the landscape of the New Orleans music scene has drastically changed since Katrina, you know, because some of those original players didn't come back. Not necessarily the players that everybody knew by name, but that weren't the mainstream players, but that was as important to the New Orleans musical fiber, you know, as the guys that was well known, you know. You know, those guys didn't come back at all. The drummers that was down in the Night War, they're all in Texas and Indiana and still. I think in some cases found a better home where, you know, where they ended up, not necessarily wanting to be there, but found out that the opportunities were better there.
We had dreamt of getting the Neville brothers together. I give Ian Neville 100% credit, although we were all assisting. Not one of those brothers thought that they would be working with any of them, and it turned out there was six Nevilles in the room, George Porter Jr. Surprise, we're all here, we're all recording, and it turns out it's the last recording the Neville brothers ever did, and the last performance that they had together.
More cowbell, man. More cowbell.
Come on, man. Get the groove.
Mm-hmm. this is Lattimore. Let's straighten it out, relax, and listen to One to One with Kevin Amos on WRCT Pittsburgh.
Going down, back on my stomping ground. Saint-Benin, Saint-Benin, Melphamine, yeah, sometimes them streets was mean, can you dig? But that was my stomping grounds. Where you at, Jack?
It's basically pretty much centered around the beat, and it's a combination of two beats. I think one's the Brown beat and one's the Trigger beat, and it's very much like a call and response, not really song-based. It's more just about getting people moving and dancing, and it's very, lyrically, it's a little more like tribal and raw and repetitive and almost Caribbean sounding. And it's just kind of the beat itself just makes you want to just dance. It's all about that. And it's just all about rocking the club. And that came to prominence, you know, with a lot of different artists from Katie Redd and Big Frida, Sissy Nobe. There's a big, big list of people that are considered bounce artists right now. And it just kind of makes you can't not dance when you hear it. It's very contagious. Yeah, when we made Act Like You Know, it was so exciting because they put us together with Manny Fresh, who's a great rapper and amazing producer in New Orleans, Big Frida, D1, great rapper, and then vocalist Angelica Jelly Joseph, who's on tour with us right now, and Erica Falls. Really fun. It was a great day in the studio.
What's happening? It's your boy, Biggie Fresh.
New Orleans is one of the most unique cultural jewels in the world, and we're lucky that it's in the United States, and that by default we're the curators and caretakers of that culture. The music has always been an amazing attraction and the force that made me listen and dive further into the culture and what were the aspects that created this music. And it's this embodiment of the entire culture of the city of New Orleans, its history, its heritage, its legacy, all of it comes together to continue to infuse this amazing culture. New Orleans will always be about New Orleans. And those who come down and get inspiration, and those who come down to play or enjoy, what they bring back out of it is that little piece of New Orleans that travels. But New Orleans will never not be about the place, the culture, the heritage, the people themselves. If it comes from New Orleans and it's New Orleanians that are doing it, it's going to be real and it's going to be good, because they demand the highest level of musicianship. They demand the highest level of attention to their art.